Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. So, there's a dilemma in the question. I'm going to answer this in two parts. I will answer the specific question. What caused this Stanford graduate to take sannyas? But before I answer that, I want to address the problem in the question. The reason that that seems like a question is because we don't really value a spiritual life. You would never say, oh, what caused a Stanford graduate to go into banking? Or what caused a Stanford graduate to get a career? Or to become a professional, or to start their own business. You'd never ask the question. It wouldn't make any sense. People intuitively think, well, of course, you graduate from a good university. Naturally, you'll go into business. Naturally, you will get a good job, start a career. Those are the marks in our society. But not just in the outer society. We've taken that society and we've put it into our own minds. We've literally opened the doors of our mind and said to our society, come on in, come on in, come live in my mind. Come live in my thoughts. You don't have to live only in my newspapers or my news shows or the corner grocery or my social media feed. Come on, come live in my own mind. So we've taken these societal concepts and we've made them our own. And those concepts are the problem. The concepts say, if you've had a good education, naturally you will want to succeed. Of course, regardless of what type of education you have, everybody wants to succeed. High school dropouts still want to succeed. They just want to succeed in a different vision than those who end up going through advanced education. The problem is in our definition of success. If someone is a high-paid professional, we consider that a success. If someone is high on a ladder in whatever their respective fields may be, we consider that a success. If someone has a large, beautiful office and they've got lots of employees and there's a lot of stakeholders in their company, we consider that a success. And so hence we have a question that seems like a question of what would make a Stanford graduate, meaning by definition, capable of becoming a success, what would make her take sannyas, which in the context of this question means not a success or a different choice of life? Why would you give up the possibility of being a success? And this is really a problem. It's a problem in how we think about success because success is not about how much money you make. Success is not about how high you are on a ladder. There's so many people in the world, so many I know personally. And if you think, I'm sure every one of you knows, at least one, if not more, people like this who are incredibly successful by external standards. Someone who's very rich or someone who is at the top of their career, but who's miserable, who's maybe an alcoholic, maybe a drug addict, maybe someone who's on their third or fourth or fifth marriage, maybe someone who can't get out of bed in the morning without antidepressants or can't go to sleep at night without a few shots of something or a sleeping pill. Someone who, no matter having everything that our world says, our society says you should have to be happy, nonetheless, isn't happy. And there's enough of those people in the world, and enough of them we all know, to realize that isn't the path. All of the money, all of the highest rung of ladders doesn't bring happiness. I remember I did this as a scientific experiment. I had been in India maybe a year and a half before I officially took vows of sannyas. And I was back in Los Angeles visiting my family, and I took a poll. Now, I was the only one who knew I was doing a scientific study. But what I did was I spoke to about maybe 10 different people I knew, all of whom I knew very well. Some were family members, some were friends, some were friends of friends. But people I knew well. And every one of them was at the height of their field. So someone who was a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you know, a multimillionaire. Someone who was a tenured professor at Stanford. Someone who was an actress in Hollywood. Someone who was a singer with a song in the top 10. Someone who was a famous athletes, and all these different people. And I spoke to every one of them, some of them in person, some on the phone. And in the midst of what seemed to be just chatting, I asked them all a question. Are you happy? And every one of them gave me one of two answers. Either they said, I will be happy when. Fill in the blank, it was different for different people. But I will be happy when. So the kids grow up and move out of the house and finally go off to college. Or I finally get the raise that I've been wanting. Or I finally lose the 10 pounds that I gained over the holidays and can squeeze back into my skirt. Or we finally move out of the city and into the suburbs. Or out of the suburbs, into the city. One or the other. Didn't matter what it was, but something that will happen in the future, and then I will be happy. Or they said, I would be happy if. And again, fill in the blank, there were different ones from different people. But all of the people I spoke to either said, I will be happy when, or I would be happy if. Every one of them still had something standing between them and happiness. And these are the highest successes in every field. Business, academia, entertainment. And it solidified for me very deeply in my mind what I already knew with my heart and what I was already seeing, which is, all of this is not what brings happiness. And of course, now we've got, over the last few decades, so many studies to show this. So many studies to show what really are the marks of a happy life. And yes, of course, you need enough money so that you're not worried about where your next meal is going to come from. You need enough money that you know you can send your children to school, that you know you can fix the roof if it leaks in the winter time, or have a sweater and jacket if you need it, that you don't need to count pennies to buy a pair of shoes. But beyond that, that which brings happiness, deep joy, isn't about a rung on a career ladder or about money in the pocket or in the bank. It's about connection. Connection to ourself, connection to others, connection to God, connection to the universe. It's about meaning in our lives. It's about a sense of being part of something that matters. And I don't mean an organization that matters or a company that matters. I mean part of a universe that matters, part of consciousness that matters, part of something that is higher, deeper, more profound, bigger than all of the dramas in our day-to-day life, than all of who said what to whom over, you know, the water cooler or over coffee at lunch. So when you ask what made a Stanford grad take sannyas, what I would say is actually the same thing that makes people who are deeply connected and aware do anything, because it is what they know is going to bring them the greatest happiness. It's not that I make decisions or choices based on some totally different model. It's the same model. It's just on a deeper level than the superficial level that most of us are looking at happiness. Most of us are thinking happiness is in this moment, what I can buy, what I can have, where I can go. But there's a lot of people in the world making a lot of different decisions from a place of awareness and consciousness and grounding and anchoring of what really brings them the deepest joy. And for me, what I found was that living this spiritual life, that living in this paradise on the banks of Ganga, in the lap of the Himalayas, being able to be in such a physically beautiful place, in the ashram, in this area, being able to be in a community full of people who are committed to their spiritual practice, who are all there because they are spiritual people, people with a common vision. Maybe they chant different mantras, but who are there together with a vision, who have chosen to live in Rishikesh, not Delhi or Mumbai, have chosen to live in an ashram, have chosen to be part of a spiritual community. Being able to live in that. Being able to live a life that is dedicated to service, that it's not about what can I get for me, how much can I make, what can I buy, but it's about what can we give, what can we do, how can we serve. And for me, that happiness has been greater than anything that I ever knew before, and I saw this right from the beginning. I knew that I had touched something that was bringing more happiness than anything that I had ever experienced and anything that I had ever even imagined in any of the different possibilities of paths that I had thought my life could go. So I made a decision very much the way that everybody makes decisions. What is it that's going to bring me the greatest, deepest, longest lasting joy in my life? So here we are. And that's the vision of success that we need. It's not about being a sannyasi or not being a sannyasi. It's about making a choice that is actually that which fills you with a sense of connection in your life, a sense of meaning in your life, of purpose in your life, that isn't about responding or reacting to what society or the culture says you should do? Because then you'd make more money, or then you'd be higher on a ladder. But really responding to what your heart knows. And that your heart is going to be in alignment with. There was a very, very beautiful saint who has since had Mahasamadhi. He since left his body a few years ago. But he used to live right across Ganga from us, Swami Dayananji Maharaj. And he said very beautifully, he said, the only vision of success that matters at all, not how much you make, not what you do, the only vision of success that matters is how you respond to the inevitable times that the universe does not act the way you think it should. How you respond when the universe means the people in your family, the people in your life, the stock market, when it doesn't act the way that you think it should. That is success. That when the waves of life hit us, when the ups and downs of life come, the trials, the tribulations, the difficulties, the challenges, when people around us are not acting the way we want them to, not speaking the way we want them to, not treating us the way we want them to, when the traffic, the weather, the interest rates, the mortgage rates, the pandemic rates are not doing what we want them to do, how do we respond? Do we react? Do we go up and down? Do we lose ourselves? Or are we able to choose peace, to choose love, to choose equanimity in the midst of all that?
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
I think there may have been a little bit of maybe a misunderstanding with the explanation from the other night, because when we were speaking about different channels, what she's referred to is a couple of nights ago, we were talking about the different ways of we interact with existence. One being this idea that everything is an illusion. All that is true is spirit, soul, oneness. And the other channel being the awareness that even though ultimately we are ocean, we also have the experience of the wave. Even though ultimately we are spirit, we have the experience in the body. It's a very important distinction, though. We never stop being spirit. We never stop being that which is infinite. We never stop being the soul, being divine. In the same way, you'll remember as I was saying the other night, the channel that you turn to doesn't just start broadcasting because you've turned to it. It's been broadcasting. So in the same way, our truth as soul is there regardless of whether we recognize it or not. This is what spiritual practice is. Spiritual practice does not make God come. It does not make you soul or spirit. It does not somehow make the truth exist. It makes you able to access that. It makes you able to know that. Whether you see that or not, it's there. If there's a huge wave, the other night the example that I had given was the example of a wave in the ocean. That the wave's highest truth is ocean. Even at the peak of its waveness, it is ocean. And in the form of the wave, there is also a reality there. It's not an illusion, just like an optical illusion of thinking there's water far off in the desert, but your eyes are playing tricks. The wave is real. If you're a surfer, you can surf it. If you're out in a boat or you're surfing or you're a swimmer and you're not a very good swimmer and the wave is very strong, you can drown, it can crush you. And its highest truth, regardless of its size, its shape, its force, its highest truth is ocean. In the same way, we have a body. That body has its own tendencies, its own skills, its own abilities, its own size, its own shape, its own strength, its own weaknesses. Those are not illusory. If you cut me and I bleed, that is not an illusion. If I break my arm and I don't go to the hospital and I don't get it fixed, the fact that my arm no longer works is not an illusion. And yet, functional arm or no functional arm, white skin, brown skin, black skin, tall, short, fat, skinny, old, young, our highest truth is soul, spirit, consciousness. But we have different ways of focusing. And that's what the different channels that I was speaking about were about. It's not about truth. It's about focus. So in the TV set, those broadcasts are all on, all the time. Channel 2 is on, Channel 4 is on, Channel 8's on, they're all on. You get to decide what you're going to focus on. In the same way, the highest truth of me as divinity, as love, as soul, as spirit, that is on. Even if I'm prancing through the world saying, you know, I'm this color, or look at my beautiful body, or look at my beautiful clothes, or I'm the, you know, CEO of this company, you better do what I say, or I can be in as much illusion, as much false identification with my body and my role as I want to be. But the truth of who I am is always there. It doesn't need me to focus on it. Like you can sit in a dark room, you can close the curtains. That doesn't make the sun go away. It's not that you open your windows and the sun then says, oh, thank God, you know, I've been waiting to rise until you opened your curtains. The sun doesn't wait for you to open your curtains to rise, it's on. You catch the sunrise, beautiful blessings for you. You don't catch the sunrise, maybe tomorrow. But the sun's not going to wait for you to get up in order to rise. So in the same way, that highest truth is there, regardless of whether we are in illusion, regardless of whether our curtains of our mind are closed or open. What sadhana does, what our meditation does, is it enables us to change that channel. It enables us to go from the channel that says, I am my body. I'm identified as my history, as my role, as my relationships, as my story. It enables us to literally go, bored with this show, right? You're watching a TV show, you may get interested for a moment, and then you decide, usme dam nahi hai, I'm very bored. Not an interesting show. Yet the bahut time waste ka hai. And you change the channel. Because you realize, mera time barbad ho raha hai, this is a silly show. In the same way, a lot of us spend a lot of time really stuck in this false identity. In the body, in the identification with that. And then our spirituality wakes us up and says, Hari, it's a bold time wasting. Tell her, let us change the channel. Realize, I'm soul, I'm spirit, wow. I'm not a certain height or weight or skin tone. I don't need fairness creams or tanning creams or diet pills or get a little pudgier pills. I don't need anything. Because who I am is soul. Is spirit. And yet, at the same time, I have a body. I'm aware that that channel exists. I'm able to take care of it, but not to get sidetracked and distracted to actually watching that channel all the time. It's enough to just know that it's there. Appreciate it. Appreciate this beautiful vehicle that you have. Another way to think about it is, let's imagine you're on a very long car ride. So you decide you're going to drive from here, not just to Delhi, but let's say you're going to drive all the way to Kanyakumari from Rishikesh. Okay? So you have a few days. Now, you can do that ride in a couple of ways. One way you can do it is you can keep watching that dial on your dashboard that changes kilometer every kilometer. And you can watch every kilometer, every kilometer. If you have a fancy dashboard, maybe it even gives you the tenth of a kilometer, 1.1 kilometer, 1.2 kilometer, 1.3 kilometer. You can pay a lot of attention to the ants that are flying onto your windshield. One ant, or flies rather. One fly, two fly, three flies. You can pay a lot of attention to how your body feels in the seat. Cello, back is getting a little stiff. Arms are getting a little stiff. Or you can turn on some beautiful music and you can be lost in the music, or you can be doing your japa, engrossed in japa while you're on the way. So many different ways you can spend that trip. And it's just a matter of focus. Because of course, whether you are paying attention to it or not, the kilometer thing is turning. Whether you're paying attention or not, flies are landing on the windshield. But it's up to you of, am I going to spend the next 4 days and thousands of kilometers counting them by a tenth of a kilometer at a time? Every time I talk to someone and they say, how are you? You say, ab 15 kilometer ho gaya, ab 17 ho gaya, ab Delhi aane wale, But that's not who you are or how you are. That's just where you are. And a lot of us mistake who we are for where we are. Otherwise, think about how many times in a day do you say to each other, how are you? Right? I know here, for example, we all live together. Right? You think about in a family or if you're in a dorm room or in an office where you're with people all day long. How many times during that day do you say, hi, how are you? 5, 10, 20, every time you pass them. Now, it's very polite, but the truth is, if we really knew who we are, that question would be very silly. Because we would say, Hari, how am I? Well, I'm exactly the same as I was when you asked me an hour ago. I'm exactly the same as I was when you asked me this morning. I'm the same as I was when you asked me 2 weeks ago. Because neither who I am or how I am is changing. Just where I am is changing. Where I am physically, where I am mentally, emotionally, psychologically, cognitively. But who I am isn't changing. How I am in this universe isn't changing. So, circling back to the question, of course we are spirit all the time. Of course we are truth and love and consciousness and divinity all the time, even in the midst of the most ignorance, even in the midst of our most attachment to drama or attachment to the body or role. But I'm not able to access the awareness of me as spirit when I'm in those moments. And that's where I need to just change the channel onto something that's more true. We could call it the not fake news channel, right? We have our fake news channel and then our real truth channel. And to change that channel from fake news that says, oh my God, you've gained 5 pounds, or oh my God, you lost 5 pounds, you better do something. Or oh my God, you've got a pimple on your nose, or oh my God, that person stole your ID and presented it to the boss, and now they look smart and you look stupid. Or oh my God, that person was so mean to me. We decide, all right, no more fake news. And we turn that channel off. And we turn to the channel of reality.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation.
This is where our practice of meditation comes in, right? When we meditate, what happens? We're meditating, our awareness is with our breath or with our mantra. And then slowly something grabs our attention. Maybe we hear a car horn honking. Maybe we smell some coffee. Something happens and it grabs our attention. And immediately our mind jumps on it and hooks itself into it. And we say, oh, that coffee smells so good. I don't know why I gave up tea and coffee. I really shouldn't have given up tea and coffee. Anyway, who says tea and coffee are wrong for us? I remember I had the best coffee one time when I went on this trip to Italy. And I was sitting outside in this cafe. It was so nice. Then this really handsome Italian man walked by, I remember. He smiled at me. Now, where's my meditation gone? Right? So here I am, I'm meditating, I'm with my breath, I'm with a mantra, a simple smell of coffee. And suddenly, here I am back, God knows how many years ago, sitting in a cafe in Italy with some handsome Italian hunk who walks by. Meditation is over. But what do? When we practice meditation, what do? We bring the mind back. Whatever style of meditation or technique of meditation you use, it's always about bring the mind back. If it gets distracted, a thought, a smell, a sound, a sensation, don't hook the awareness in, just bring it back. The moment you notice the mind has wandered, just bring it back. Just bring it back. And this is not only for our active, eyes closed, seated meditation time. This is actually the teaching for life. Because life is the same. We're going on about our life, we're anchored in mindfulness, anchored in awareness, anchored in consciousness, anchored in love for all. And then someone says something, and it's really obnoxious, it's really rude, it's really hurtful. And what happens? We lose. Suddenly there we are, in anger. In defensiveness. Who do they think they are? How dare they talk to me like that? Don't they know who I am? I've been so nice to them. I try so hard. Why would they talk to me like that? It's not fair. It's not just. And we've lost. We've lost our moment. There we are in the drama. Because, of course, it usually also doesn't end there. Then we go into, I remember a year ago he did it to me also. Yeah, last week he did it to me also. He always does it. I say one thing one time and the boss yells, or the teacher yells, or my parents yell. But this guy all the time, or this lady all the time, nothing happens. Not fair. So we get into stories and dramas and we lose our anchoring, just like we lose it in meditation. And the answer is the exact same. The moment you notice you've lost it, just bring it back. Sometimes literally mid-sentence. I know when I was a kid, we used to play this game where you'd be at a party, and they would turn on the music, and everyone would dance, and then whoever was running the music middle of the song, middle of the line, would just turn the music off suddenly. And the rule was that wherever you were, when that music stopped, whatever funny position you were in, you know, in the middle of dancing, you had to just freeze in that position and hold it until the music started again. And then you would again dance, and then the music would again stop, and you were, you know, one leg up, one leg down. And I think about that a lot because it actually is a great skill. It was just a fun kid's party game, but it's a great skill. With adults, what you find is, if the music stops, they will get themselves back into kind of a normal position. If the leg is up, they'll put it down. Arm is up, they'll kind of bring it down. Mouth is, you know, they'll close it. People are paying attention, I should not look stupid. But kids are not like that. Kids are much freer. The minute the music stops, they're frozen. And it's such a wonderful skill because this is how it happens in life. You're in the middle of something. You're saying something, you're yelling at someone. Or you're in your own mind having your own personal drama. And suddenly that music stops. Suddenly there is that moment of, oh my God, I've lost it. Look, I'm gone. And what you need to do literally, mid-thought, mid-word, I don't care if you literally are like, halfway through some obscenity that you're yelling at somebody, halfway through the word, if that's when you realize you've lost it, just stop right there. And bring it back. Bring it back. And of course we think, oh my God, samne wale kya sochega, what are they gonna think? But the truth is, if you think about being in the other situation, if you think about being the person being yelled at, being the person someone has just lost their temper at unnecessarily, you already think they're crazy. Nobody gets yelled at and thinks, oh yeah, they're really right. Boy, I'm so glad this person has taken the time to show me where I'm wrong. Right? Somebody shouts at you and you're thinking, Hare kab band ho jayega. Like you just, or you're thinking they're crazy, or you're planning what you're gonna say next because you know this is crazy. And if somebody actually stops in the middle, if you also are on a path of opening consciousness, I personally would be very impressed. If someone mid-sentence to me stopped and said, oh my God, I've lost myself in this drama. Oh my God, I've lost myself in this anger and stopped, I would be so impressed. So don't worry about thinking that that person was taking you seriously when you were yelling at them and now is not going to take you seriously. I can pretty much promise you they weren't taking you seriously. If you were really yelling and shouting, as it was, they thought you had gone off a little. At least now they will think you've come back. And what's most important in any case is not samne wale kya sochega. It's how you are in your path. The number of lives that have been ruined because of samne wale kya sochega. It's probably more than we've lost in every single war throughout history combined. How many lives have been ruined because we lived only according to what we were worried other people would say or think? At least stop now. At least have that awareness. Mid-internal drama, mid-external drama, mid-hijack by the ego, to just say, thank you, God. You know, when we go to temples and we ring the bell, right? Why do we ring the bell? It's not like we have to wake up God, I'm here, coming in now, hope you're dressed. Right? I mean, God obviously doesn't need to be awoken or need any notice that we're entering a temple. It's not like you're going to somebody's house and you give them a few minutes to get ready. Why do we ring the bell? We ring the bell for ourselves. I'm going into a temple now. Get my mind straight. Ring out the nonsense that was going on. I'm now entering a holy place. That bell is literally to ring out the craziness of our own mind. So get yourself a bell. Really, get a little bell. I mean, if you're serious about the path, get yourself a little bell, carry it with you. Keep it in your pocket, keep it in your purse, and the moment that you realize you're going somewhere, just ring your bell. Ring your bell and come back.
Sadhviji, the third question is...
By the way, that would be a great gift to give out as prasad.
Yeah.
I think we should get a whole bunch of those bells and give them out as prasad. Little bells we can give people. Like on keychains. Bells on keychains. Because everybody's carrying keys all the time. People could ring their bell.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
Yes. The quandary of the inner voice. You know, we speak so frequently about listen to your inner voice, go within. The dilemma is that makes it sound like the only inner voice is the voice of God, the divine voice. When actually, pretty much all of the voices that really wreak havoc on our lives come from within. Sure, you may also have a really annoying, really loud, incessantly talking family member or colleague or neighbor. But most of the stuff, the vast majority of the stuff that really steals our peace is actually the voices in our own heads. And so interestingly and paradoxically, they're all inner voices. But they're not all the voice of God. Very few of them are. Most of them are the ego, the fear, desires, patterns, habits. So how do we know when it's the voice of God? And the only way to know is to get so familiar with that voice of God that immediately you can pick it out of the crowd. And that's why the practice, the meditation practice, is so important. Too many of us decide to start meditating in a time of crisis. And the problem with that is that at that time, there's so many voices inside that if you don't know, you don't recognize that divine voice, it's going to seem like chaos inside. So this is where it's so important prior to the chaos to develop a relationship with that inner voice through your meditation. Imagine a set of mothers come to the nursery to pick up their babies, right? Now they're waiting outside, let's say. I'm just painting a scene for you. Inside a nursery, kids are being looked after, taken care of. Mothers are standing outside waiting to pick them up. Suddenly from inside the nursery, one of the babies starts crying. Now, to an onlooker, they all sound the same. It's a baby crying. But the mother of that child knows, that's my kid. And immediately, one mother runs inside to get her baby. Not all 10, not all 20, not nobody. One mother, the mother whose child it is. How does she know? And how do the other mothers know it's not theirs? One baby crying sounds very much like every baby crying, unless it's your baby, at which point you know. They have spent so much energy, deep energy, connecting with that being, the sound of the voice, the sound of the cries, that they know immediately. They recognize the voice immediately. That's what we need to do with that voice of the divine. Get familiar with it. As you meditate, you hear that voice, you know that voice, so that later in a time of crisis or a time of the ego really having a go at it, you're able immediately to distinguish, ah, that's the divine voice versus that isn't. Because you know that divine voice. You're so connected to it. It's so familiar to you. Otherwise, teasing apart this voice of the ego, this voice of fear, this voice of desires, this voice that was my fifth grade teacher or my uncle or my aunt or my mother or father who told me I was stupid and worthless, that I've internalized as my own voice. Otherwise, those voices just drown out that divine voice. So develop the relationship. Get to know it. Get familiar with it. Make a friendship, a relationship with it, so that you can always, always pick it out of the crowd. And then you don't get deceived by the ego masquerading as that divine voice, because you'll know.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.